You think you are?
The clerk looked pissed off.
You don't summon the guildmaster like he is a common thug.
Her face looked troubled when Frank appeared next to Dale moments later. He had moved so fast that he was invisible till he stopped.
What?
Frank barked at the clerk. Then he noticed Dale.
Oh, I thought there was an issue with the dungeon. What is the matter, Dale?
Dale explained about the tax rate, and to his credit, Frank looked confused.
I sent the orders about the tax rate this morning.
He looked at the clerk, who gulped.
Where is the memo?
Sir, it was just a misunderstanding,
she began, but was quickly cut off by Frank.
I didn't ask for you to talk. I asked where the memo was,
he growled.
Hurry up! I ran out of a meeting for this. Literally.
She rummaged around in her papers, obviously stalling. Frank made a noise and stepped in, pulling out a paper hidden under her logbook. He showed Dale the proclamation, then held it close to the clerk.
Are you trying to make the guild look like a bunch of greedy, self-serving shakedown artists? Or can you just not follow orders?
He tore into the despondent clerk.
Sir, I just thought that...
Cutting her off again.
Obviously you didn't think. This is the second time you have been caught disregarding orders. I shudder to think about all the times you must have gotten away with things if you have only been caught for these gross infractions. I know that you aren't technically part of the Adventurer's Guild, but do you think you will keep your job if I go talk to your master at the Scribes Guild? Your job isn't exactly labor-intensive, and it pays well. I'm sure we could find someone trustworthy to fill it if you do something like this again. Give me a count of the reported incomes of the guild members who've entered by the end of the day.
Frank turned back to Dale.
I'm sorry about this, Dale. The guild will cover the differences in reported incomes today. We can't charge the people who already went in, after all. They didn't agree to the rate.
Dale smiled. Frank, my real worry was that you had a hand in this. Seeing that you've so quickly resolved the issue renews my confidence in you. I am very glad that my choice of you for the council was the correct decision. Frank nodded, but wondered if Dale understood that what he had just said was as much a compliment as a warning. Probably not. He knew Dale didn't have the understanding of political subtleties to make that kind of remark, so he took it at face value.
I certainly hope my loyalties are never again called into question and that I keep your confidence for a very long time.
He glared at the quailing clerk and removed himself at high speed, returning to his meeting. Dale looked around at his nonplussed team and the suddenly silent line of people waiting to enter. The clerk was nearly in tears at her public admonition. Her newfound realization that professionalism was the only thing allowing her to keep her job forced her to hold back the waterworks.
Well, shall we enter?
8. Dale's group walked into the much larger entrance and looked around, whistling at the bustling mining activity. Whereas before the door had entered into a shallow cave entrance and only 8 or 9 people had been able to mine at a time without injuring their neighbor, now it seemed like half the population of the camp was chipping away at the stone.
Excuse me, could I get by you there?
A man asked them politely. Turning to let him pass, Dale exclaimed in wonder. He was meeting a non-human half-breed for the first time in his life.
Of course. Hello, my name is Dale. It is a pleasure to meet you, sir. Can I ask your name?
Dale almost stammered in his excitement. The man was built like a dwarf, having the beard and the height, but his features were distinctly orcish. He was also in full plate armor and wore it with an ease that spoke of constant use. The man eyed Dale for a moment, looking for disgust or pity, then broke into a wide grin, revealing disturbingly pointed teeth.
Well, some of the asshats around here call me Nork-Nork like I have damn gnome blood, but I am a dwarf, and proud of it!
He roared at a couple of miners nearby who had been making rude comments about him. He held out his hand and shook Dale's in a powerful grip.
The name's Evan.
A dork named Evan? Hans failed to hide his mirth at the subtle taunt. A half-dwarf, half-orc, with a human name.
It's pronounced Dwork.
Evan eyed Hans.
I don't know if we will get along well, you and I. It has been a pleasure to meet you, though, Dale. I need to get to work. I have a month to make my first payment on this beauty.
He hoisted his pickaxe, the same one that Dale had rescued from thieves recently. Evan stepped over to an unoccupied area along the wall and put on a helmet.
That is an odd piece of gear to wear, Tom commented. Matter of fact, I have not seen any other miners wearing any armor, let alone full plate.
His curiosity was sated moments later when Evan gave a mighty swing of his pick and the wall in front of him shattered with a thunderous roar. Splintered rock bounced off the dwarf's armor, sending him staggering back a few steps. Instead of moving forward again for another blow, he waited a few moments. The fallen rock in front of him started to vanish, leaving behind chunks of pure iron ore. Evan collected the ore into a large bucket and smiled.
Best job I've ever had!
He swung his pick again with a mighty grunt. Dale's group had had enough of the noise, and so started walking into the dungeon's depths. After the first turn, most of the natural light vanished, leaving them in a blue-tinted gloom. The groups allowed in the dungeon were spaced a minimum of 20 minutes apart, which would allow for mobs, dungeon monsters, to respawn and essence to reaccumulate in the air. Dale felt the essence around him with his enhanced senses, remarking that it was a little less concentrated than usual for the first floor. He asked Hans for his opinion, but was told that since they were usually the first to enter the dungeon each morning, the essence had usually been able to build up. Also, the mana barrier over the door had likely blocked essence production, lowering essence in the dungeon further. They moved quickly through the area, overtaking an F-ranked group that glared at Dale's smiling group as they returned to the surface. The people in that group were sweaty and dirty. Obviously, they had worked hard and decided to cut their losses and leave before dying. In the second room, they found things greatly changed. Dale's first impression was that they had stepped outside. There was lush greenery all around, and the room was brightly lit. They had to squint as they looked around, unaccustomed to the brightness after walking through the tunnel. Feeling relatively secure, Dale looked up and saw that the ceiling had a thin layer of glass over it which held glowing fluid between it and the rock, accounting for the bright light. There was no path. The room was completely overgrown in what could almost be called a beautiful arrangement of flowers and herbs.
"Wow, it is beautiful,"
Rose breathed in deeply, smelling the combination of herbs and flowers.
"She said it is beautiful."
Dale heard my smug voice in his mind. He looked around for the source and swore softly.
"So, you are real then, Cal? Not a figment of my imagination brought on by stress and trauma?"
Dale thought hopefully at the dungeon.
"None of these flowers compare to you, sweet Rose," Hans poetically promised the uninterested female.
Rose glared at him.
"You are old enough to be my grandpa."
There was no response from Hans, just a pained look.
"Yes, I am real. Sorry about this. I have no idea why you can hear me. You really shouldn't be able to. It must be a side effect of my experiment. I can kill you if that would help."
"Experiment? What do you mean?"
Dale ignored the offer of death for some unknown reason.
"I thought about how much I wanted to tell him. Well, I wanted to see if I could fix a human, and then you conveniently died after helping me out, so I figured, you know, might as well try to see if I can do it."
"There is no other reason? You didn't want an ally, a slave, or anything like that?"
Dale thought heatedly.
"Nope. Just wanted to test myself. Plus, you did help me out, so I feel it was justified if you survived. It won't happen again. Nothing personal, but you humans are fairly tasty. Can you try and invite some different races in? I haven't tried elf yet, but a few have poked their heads in here, so, you know, I am getting excited,"
I assured him. Dale shook his head.
"What the hell is going on?" he muttered. Then a basher slammed into the side of his leg, leaving him no more time for questions.
"Ow!"
They tightened their formation, protecting their less well-armored members in the center. Tom stated the obvious.
"I cannot see a thing through this underbrush," Where are they?
Hans nodded at the question. The essence in the plants makes them too dense to see through, and so I can't tell where the mobs are based on their auras alone. Look out. I'm going to open up some space. Otherwise, look for moving plants. The knives in his hands took on a soft shine, and he swung them in a slow arc. The plants in front and to the side of him fell over, clean cuts separating their stalks. Several bashers were also torn in half, adding thick red blood to the runny sap dripping to the floor. With a clear kill zone, they made short work of the weak bashers in the area.
No loot dropped,
Adam noted after waiting for the familiar clink of coins. Rose's keen eyes spotted something.
What is that?
She pointed at a rock-like formation that was tinted green to blend in with the plants. Hans's eyes gleamed.
That, my dear, is a treasure chest.
He rushed over and caressed its surface, rubbed his face on it, and then lifted the lid. Inside lay several thick copper coins and a potion containing a syrupy light source.
Score! I can pour this on myself and pretend I'm a ghost tonight.
Are these typical in here?
Rose looked around for danger as she awaited an answer. She had only been in the dungeon once before, and that traumatic experience had her on edge now.
Nay, 'tis a new occurrence, Tom informed her gravely. Though I must say, I prefer collecting from a single area instead of scrambling along the floor on all fours chasing a rolling copper.
Hey, I do miss that aspect of things. It was always fun to put them just far enough away from each other that people would have to bend over and reach like 20 times. Remember that handsome book writer who tagged along with a group for inspiration? What was his name? Dakota? When his team was distracted, I kept making slow, chubby bashers attack him. He started swearing and sweating at the same time. He squealed every time a basher came close. I don't think I've ever laughed so hard before.
Dale steadfastly worked to ignore the voice talking in his head. They debated stopping to cultivate, but decided that it would be better to get to an area where the essence in the air was denser. They continued onward, now on the lookout for treasure chests as well as monsters and traps. Dale was directing his friends around what his enhanced vision saw as thin stone in the wall when he heard a giggle in his mind. His eyes narrowed, and instead of bypassing the section, he smashed the wall, revealing a bright silver chest.
Aw, how did you know?
Dale opened the chest, finding several shining bars of silver and a few healing potions. He distributed the potions, keeping one for himself and ignoring Hans as he was the least likely to get hurt. The others looked at him oddly, so Dale tried to justify his actions without letting the dungeon know how he actually figured it out.
The size of that space was a lot smaller than the traps normally are, as well as being shaped differently.
The others nodded, cheerful at their good fortune. Those bars of silver would bring in a good chunk of money, roughly 20 silver coins per bar. They continued past some obvious traps and into the third room. This room was similar to how it had been arranged in the past, with a few blatant differences. The very large open space had lots of bashers, but they were mainly clustered in large groups with only a few wandering the areas between them. As they studied the room, the rationale became obvious. The thicker clusters of bashers were around small chests of various colors. The rarer the coloration, the higher the population of mobs. At a few points, they normally would not explore in the room, such as midway and far to the right. There were even advanced bashers that they only normally saw in the boss room and on the lower floor. Hans whistled when he saw why they were there.
Look, they are kind of hiding that chest, and it is glowing. Can we open it? Pretty please?
He batted his eyelashes at Dale as if he were trying to be seductive.
I'm greedy and owe a flesh mage a lot of money.
Dale chuckled. He was glad that Hans had asked and didn't try to undermine him as the leader of the team.
Really hard to report what we don't know about, right?
That was the phrase they had always used to make Craig give in when they wanted to explore.
Oh, yeah.
Hans maliciously unsheathed his daggers, and the team got ready to fight. They moved forward, killing the bashers in their way, taking no hits from the fairly predictable attacks. They learned to fight monsters in the order they came across them after Rose loosed an arrow at one a good distance away. The arrow struck its target, a basher, who squealed and limped toward them. The group it was in, as well as every group they passed, joined in the charge until a wave of bounding fur was sprinting toward them.
"Oops,"
Rose muttered as the team glared at her. Tom stepped forward, swinging his hammer down to lightly graze the stone floor and then continuing toward the bashers. The weapon impacted the floor at an angle and sent shards of broken stone flying forward at high speeds. These shards shredded the small bodies like crossbow bolts. Easily a half dozen were killed, while others were badly wounded, bleeding out in moments in a few cases. The rest continued onward, ignoring their fallen comrades. Rose began releasing arrows while Dale stepped forward to attack. Since there was still some distance between them, he activated the enchantment on his weapon and started swinging. The spiked head of the weapon stayed in perfect alignment with the shaft, which meant that it moved far faster at a distance than the shaft of his weapon. Physics. At its maximum range, he could swing the shaft of the weapon slowly, and the ball would blur through the air, greatly increasing the amount of force applied to whatever it hit. Any of the bashers that were struck lost flesh in chunks and usually died, but they were small and nimble while the weapon was unwieldy at range. He missed, far more than he hit, when he was trying to mash the scurrying creatures at any greater range than he was used to. Still, they were able to finish off the bashers with little issue, though Hans groaned as a bit of blood landed on his otherwise immaculate clothes. They certainly planned on collecting the contents of the chest the group had been guarding, but first they attacked the advanced bashers to get to the glowing chest. Hans stepped forward, then suddenly appeared behind them, stabbing two mobs through the brainstem before they could react. One heavily armored smasher bounded toward the main group of humans, but Adam braced himself and thrust the pointed end of his staff toward it in a panic, skewering the basher through the eye and into its brain with a lucky attack. They stopped, breathing heavily due to their pumping adrenaline, and started chuckling. They were so excited. The group hadn't taken any injuries, and it was obvious their practice of formations and teamwork were starting to pay dividends. They opened the chest, revealing two runed holy symbols and an inscribed dagger. Working exuberantly to clear the room and open all the chests, they moved on to attack the boss room. Cal.
Dale's group seemed to be doing fine.
Ugh.
Too well, as per usual. Some of the other groups in here were doing less than perfect, and Annie and I decided to watch them for a bit. Specifically, we focused on a group that I had taken a personal dislike to. They called themselves The Collective and had stolen a live Glitterflit a few weeks back. I have no idea how it was doing. After it was taken out of the dungeon, I could no longer sense it. I assumed the poor bunny had either died or was dying, since most of the mobs in here needed the essence-rich environment to survive for long periods of time. I thought for a moment. Maybe the shroomish would be fine in the wild, but who knows? The Collective had just defeated Rail and were opening the chest in the room. As per usual, they complained about the amount of money as well as the quality of items. To be fair, I had started intentionally creating weapons with flaws so they would break after enough uses. I had learned my lesson after giving Tom what basically amounted to an unbreakable warhammer that he swung around all the time. Now, runes were typically hard to break after essence had gone through them at least once, hence I introduced intentional flaws. Plus, Danny told me that if a rune broke while essence was moving through it, interesting things could happen. This group of six finished collecting their loot and looked downward, where they could see the silverwood tree through the glass at their feet. After a brief argument, they found the stairs, one set leading up and connecting to the surface, and another leading down into unknown danger. The argument they had was simple. It was based on whether or not to smash the glass and jump down. Eventually, they made a decision and walked toward the stairs. This wasn't because they wanted to do things in the proper order, oh no. The reason they deigned to find the stairs is because they tried to smash the floor.
Heh. Good luck with that.
I had reinforced it with runes and powered it with earth corruption. To smash through, they would need to supply at least an equal amount of wind essence and enough force to break the hardened, glassy surface. They walked down the stairs, and I started to get excited. Soon, I would get to test my new creatures in combat. The stairs continued at a 45-degree angle downward to the north, which meant they would have to come into the labyrinth very far away from the center of the room, which they would need to find in order to fight the boss. They paused in the small 6x5-foot room I had created at the bottom of the descent, looking around critically. There were four doors in the room, excluding the stairs back out. Above each of the doors, I had carved small pictures. A drop of water, a flame, a stone, and a whirl to represent wind. They stared at these, then determined that they were representative of the trials they would face down each hallway. Heh. They actually had no meaning. I put them there to confuse people and make them think there was a pattern to things. They stepped boldly through the stone doorway and started walking down the narrow hall. Unlike the tunnels above, there was not even a soft glow to see by. Also, unlike the floors above, these halls were straight and had many, many branching paths. After they were a few turns in, I sealed the door they had entered through by quietly lowering a slab of stone. Unless you had seen it happen, it would look just like one of the many dead ends. The majority of the group were D-ranked, with the leader a bold C-rank. They walked along without light, using their essence-enhanced vision to see. This allowed them to see and navigate using the essence in the air, but they did not count on how thick the essence actually was in this room. Using the loose essence to see by on this floor was like holding a bright lantern in fog. You could see directly around you, but not through it. The cost of their arrogance came due quickly, and with compounded interest. As they passed an open connection in the tunnel, a flesh cat silently lashed out at the member in the rear. The highly armored man started squealing, unaccustomed to pain as he was, and the cat retreated a few feet, readying itself to pounce. The other members of the group quickly formed a perimeter around the fallen man, and their healer tried to diagnose him.
It is like a sword ignored his armor and laid open his gut. I need a potion, now!
The healer barked. The man guarding the doorway reached into his bag and started fishing for a potion. The flesh cat took advantage of his inattention, pouncing forward and furiously mauling him, swiping back and forth almost a dozen times. The man's screaming died off quickly, and he fell to the ground, dead with no obvious marks on him, but blood flooded out of the joints in his armor. The leader of the group flashed forward, skewering the cat and concurrently landing a blow that snapped its neck.
"What in the abyss is that? Pull a potion from his pack. I need to finish the healing." "Ugh, too late."
The healer shook blood off his fingers with a grimace. The leader gave a grim smile. "It's an unexpected windfall. The guild pays very well for new mob corpses to study." He pulled out a small sack and started stuffing the corpse into it. Somehow, he fit the 80-ish-pound, 4-foot-long cat into it and put the small bag back in his pocket. Callously, they rummaged through the corpse's pockets and took their expensive armor, then left the dead men on the floor and continued exploring. The remaining men, bizarrely, seemed happy with the outcome, as it meant they would have a larger cut of the profits. "What in the heck?" I turned my mental attention to Danny. "Did you see that?"
"Yeah. I can't believe they just left their friends like that,"
Danny commiserated with me.
"Huh? No, that's fine. They stuffed a whole beast into a tiny little bag."
"Oh. Sure, I'm fairly certain that is a dimensional bag. They're made from heavily enchanted and inscribed standard beast cores."
"What kind of beast core? What do you mean by standard? I was always happy to learn new things."
"So, you know how I told you about the different ranks of cultivation?"
Danny prodded. She continued after I mentioned that I did.
"At the different cultivation levels, cores gain different properties. There are flawed, weak, standard, strong, beastly, immaculate, luminous, and radiant beast cores. Essentially, the beast's diet, age, and strength of cultivation affect the quality of their stone. Immaculate cores are usually only found in B-ranked or higher beasts, and are extremely receptive to enchantments.
What kind of core am I? I plaintively wondered. Not because I wanted to be the best kind, certainly not. It isn't like I work at being the best, most beautiful, or dangerous dungeon that exists.
I am fairly certain that you started out as a beastly core. Your configuration is categorically different, though, so now it is hard to tell where you fall in the rankings. Remember, you were altered with what I can only assume was spiritual energy, and it shifted around what makes you a cohesive whole.
You mean my molecules were shifted into a non-standard configuration?
Sure.
She looked at me like I had started spewing orcish.
Anyway, that is why you were able to make a soul stone to House Dale's center. While the configuration had been set by spiritual energy, the pattern was easily replicable as it was a physical change. It all comes back to the fact that you are a very different type of core. I'd say one of a kind, but, well, Dale.
Right. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and call myself Radiant, I preened a bit.
Knew you would,
Danny muttered, grinning as I huffed at her.
9. Dale smiled happily at how his bag clinked as he walked along.
Today has been a good day.
The others agreed, as they had each made exceedingly good money. After finding several chests, both standard and hidden, they had to slow down and adjust their pouches so they would stop banging against their sides. They were just coming to the end of the 5th main room on the expanded 2nd floor. Sitting down, they began cultivating with as much focus as possible. Tom was drawing in as much at a time as he dared, his open meridian helping by drawing off a good portion of his essence and keeping it circulating. This allowed him to pull more into his center without worrying about damaging himself. Remembering Craig's orders to not cultivate outside of the dungeon, he pushed himself even harder.
Ha!
Adam shouted, making the group collectively reach for their weapons.
Did it!
He looked around with his grin slowly fading as he saw the sour faces looking at him.
Sorry. I just regained my D-rank 5.
He had dropped a rank by using too much essence in an incantation during the fight with the distortion cat a week ago.
That was way faster than expected, Hans clapped him on the arm. Great! Easier to get to a rank when you've been there before, isn't it? Don't worry, it happens sometimes.
Adam looked at him curiously.
You have lost a rank in the past?
Yeah, everyone wants to try enchanting at least once, you know.
Hans ruefully sighed.
Let's just say there is a reason you should buy them and not make them.
The others fell silent as they thought about his words. They had all considered enchanting in the past. Rose shook off the sudden melancholy first.
Well, are we ready to hit the boss room? Rail is waiting for us, and I promised Grandma Chandra that I'd bring her some fresh rail steak since we are eating it so often. She's losing money.
They all jumped to their feet and got into formation, cheering themselves on and getting mentally prepared to fight the massive basher. They cautiously marched into the final room of the floor, noticing differences immediately. Adam informed them of the most obvious.
The Silverwood tree is gone, he called in a shocked tone.
Dale started sweating with unadulterated fear. If the tree was damaged, the dark elves would most likely kill everyone in the area. After torturing them for a few weeks, he looked around the open flat room for any sign of its whereabouts, noticing the new glassy floor just as Rail charged them.
Here we go!
Hans whooped as they tensed their knees, throwing themselves out of the way and scattering.
Our first real boss fight as a team!
Rose responded as she began launching arrows at the presumed weak points in Rail's armor.
What, the cat didn't count?
Nope.
Hans did a cartwheel over Rail, avoiding getting trampled by inches.
That was some kind of wild monster that got in here. This is a real test from the dungeon. A test? Hardly,
Tom roared.
This rabbit should be cooked well and served to me, not disgracing this dungeon with its weakness.
This statement shocked the others so much that they paused a moment too long, and Dale paid for his inattention by taking a light blow to the edge of his breastplate, heavily denting it as he was thrown aside. Ignoring Dale, Rael turned slowly and stared directly at Tom, pawing at the ground just before charging. Tom stood still in defiance, not moving until Rael was almost in striking range. Then he swung his mighty warhammer back and around, bringing it down on Rael's head with enough force to shatter the protective armor and send shards of stone into the soft brain below. Rael's momentum was transferred downward as his head stopped moving and his body flipped. It began coming down on Tom, but he braced himself and dodged almost entirely out of the way, losing only a bit of skin as the rough armor met his unprotected flesh.
Ha! I was certain of my ability to defeat this foe alone. This validation of my increasing skill pleases me greatly.
Tom looked at his teammates with a huge smile on his face, bleeding from small cuts where razor-sharp stone shards had sliced him.
Did you just taunt Rael?
Hans unbelievingly exclaimed.
Just so, Tom nodded. I was under the impression that he was an intelligent foe, and it was a pleasure and honor to defeat him. My insults do taint my victory, but I felt a great need to know my progression for certain.
See if I fall for that again.
Dale ignored my quiet voice by force of will.
This was way more fun than fighting that demon cat was.
Rose was flushed with victory, already spending the rewards in her mind.
Is there another chest in here somewhere?
There it is!
Dale shouted exuberantly, jumping in the air and whooping. The others turned in excitement, ready for treasure, but were disappointed to see Dale looking downward. Adam raised an eyebrow.
The treasure is under the floor?
Dale shook his head.
No, the tree! There is another floor, and the tree is below us! We're gonna live!
This comment earned him a few odd looks.
Oh, well.
Rose spotted the treasure chest tucked away on the far side of the room, its exterior a bright but not glowing golden color.
There is the chest!
All of them moved to collect their rewards, and even a highly relieved Dale peeled himself away from his view. They pulled open the chest, finding it filled with silver coins and potions. There was another pickaxe in the chest that appeared to be inscribed, as well as a set of arrows that glowed with bright enchantments to their enhanced vision.
Dibs!
Rose called, pointing at the dangerously barbed arrows. She lifted them out and let Hans scoop the coins into a bag he had with them.
Shall we sell the pick, or is one of you feeling like taking up mining as a hobby?
Let's sell it. I know a guy who would be happy to get us the best price for it, Dale said, thinking of his new friend Tyler.
Hans eyed him. Don't forget that the guild still gets a cut, no matter who you sell it through.
Of course. I was just thinking we could bypass the listing fee that they make you pay at the guild auction house. If we go directly to a merchant, we'll get more, Dale assured his friend.
Tom was eyeing the stairs leading down into darkness.
Dale, how would you feel challenging the next floor? After such a fast fight with the glorious Rael, my blood screams out for battle.
Dale went silent.
Well, we have no idea what is down there. Should we wait for a report?
Hans nodded. That would be a wise plan.
I'm up for it,
Rose offered as she tested the balance and flexibility of her new arrows, ruffling the fletching to inspect the craftsmanship. Adam made a noncommittal noise when the others looked at him.
Perhaps just a peek to see what awaits us,
Tom pleaded, edging toward the stairwell. Dale looked around. Each of them nodded, and Hans shrugged.
We can at least see what the next floor looks like, I suppose.
They walked down the stairs for several minutes, the angle making them seem to walk a far longer distance than it actually was. At the bottom, there was a small room with three doorways spaced oddly far apart.
What do those symbols mean, do you think?
Adam pointed to the carvings above the doors.
Hans grunted. No idea. But unless I miss my guess, this is also a doorway, but closed. He pointed at the square stone-like symbol. Maybe it is the exit. It opens from the other side, you think?
Well, let's take a look. Which one do you want to go in?
Dale put the matter to a vote. There were 3 votes for the fire door, hardly surprising as 2 members of the team were fire cultivators. Hans clapped Tom on the arm.
Go team hot stuff.
Hot stuff? Tom considered the words. If you mean the fire of battle with which we temper our souls, I agree to this team name.
Hans blew out a lungful of air slowly.
You know, you just...
Let's just go, Dale.
They all stepped into the darkness and took a few steps when Hans stopped them.
Wait. Do you see that?
They looked about them, but Adam was the one who answered.
I see nothing. The essence is very dense on this floor, though.
Exactly. Too dense. Stay here. He walked forward a few feet and vanished to their enhanced vision.
Where did I go? Didst thou find a tunnel, perhaps?
Tom called uncertainly into the darkness.
Nope.
Hans was in front of them again.
Stop enhancing your sight. Watch and learn.
He reached into his pack and produced a light potion. He shook the vial without opening it, and it began glowing brightly. Within moments, they were able to see as far as the tunnel extended, at least until it took a sharp turn.
Now, enhance your vision again.
They did as instructed, and their range of vision suddenly dropped to a few feet. Rose broke the silence.
How strange.
Agreed. This will make it much harder to watch for traps, Dale mentioned, as an afterthought. And monsters.
On the plus side,
Rose smiled as she suddenly plopped to the ground.
Our vision is being impaired by free-floating essence.
She began cultivating, causing a small competition as they all attempted to clear the air in the tunnel. Cal.
Huh. That was unexpected, I muttered to Danny.
What's that? Sorry, I was looking at my garden. Another group chopped all the plants down,
Danny told me sourly.
Oh? Let's do something about that tonight.
I directed her attention to the adventurers on our level.
Look! They just sat down. They normally try to clear the rooms first, don't they?
Yes, but to be fair, they aren't being attacked, and they are getting a lot of essence. It makes sense to me.
Danny looked at the other group in the area.
At least they aren't getting a chance to relax.
I had been haranguing the collective since they first reached this floor.
Luckily for them, I didn't have fine enough control of the essence in the room to make and control large groups of cats. I could either make a few and control them well, or make a swarm and let them run rampant in the dungeon. Since I didn't want a large group of uncontrollable cats in the area... Whoops. Back on topic.
I had intermittently been sending squads of advanced bashers or individual cats at the group, and they had slowly begun falling to my war of attrition.
I had just had a successful sneak attack. While they had been focused on the bashers, a cloud cat had gracefully drifted down the long, straight hallway behind them and savagely torn into their healer. The screams of the healer had only lasted a moment, but it was long enough to distract the other members. They had each taken a few wounds from the bashers, including one nasty burn from the hellfire on the horn of an impaler. Not enough to take them down, but more than they were prepared to deal with without a healer. Soon, their leader was gritting his teeth to steel himself against the others' complaints. So far, he was the only one mostly undamaged, and he had resolutely stuffed the body of the cloud cat in his bag and marched onward. Now it was obvious they were looking for an exit, and they retraced their steps as well as they could. They even had found where they entered, but thought they were wrong since the door was closed and seamlessly blended with the stone around it. They had been wandering for nearly an hour when I noticed they were approaching Dale's group and the open doorway behind them.
The leader of the group cocked his head and motioned for his minions to be silent. He looked around the corner carefully, drew a blade, and motioned for his team to get ready to attack. A tap on his shoulder made him wave his hand in a shooing motion as he gripped his sword.
Ahem.
The leader furiously started to turn, glaring at the offender who had made the noise, only to find a gleaming dagger pressed to his Adam's apple.
Well, hello there, sunshine, Hans smiled blithely at the quickly paling man. You weren't really going to attack a group from the guild in here, were you?
He fluttered his eyelashes sweetly. The man began to bluster.
What? No, of course not. I was just preparing in case this turned out to be another trap. This dungeon is devious, and we have lost three of our group. These two have taken serious injuries.
He waved at his underlings, who helped his case by looking extra pathetic.
Well, you are always welcome to leave peacefully. Hans stressed the last word and stepped to the side, narrowly missing a wither cat as it lunged at the group.
It swiped its claws deeply into the arm of one of the members of the collective before running to a safe distance, hissing and retreating back into the concealing darkness.
What in the abyss was that?
Hans shouted as he watched the retreating feline figure. The leader looked away from his bleeding subordinate.
That's one of the new mobs. They're on an entirely different level than the ones above. The essence in the air. I can't even tell their ranking. They die a lot faster than the armored bashers, but the wounds they inflict.
He waved at the downed man. Hans moved in for a closer look. He frowned at the man who was writhing on the ground and beginning to scream,
"Cut it off! Oh gods, cut it off!"
It looks like a shallow cut.
Is it poison? Hans spoke over the screams.
The name is Nick, by the way. Headman of the collective.
The leader said with a worried look at his downed man.
I don't think so, but I can't tell for certain. We lost our healer earlier on this cursed floor.
Dale's group had come closer when the noise became audible, so Adam was quickly motioned over. He immediately sent healing light into the wound and gasped, sweat forming as he waged an intense battle. The screams died down, and the man began thanking Adam profusely.
No, this is not over. I merely delayed the infection until a more powerful healer can fix it.
The cleric informed his now nervous patient.
What happened? What did it do?
Dale quizzed his friend.
Yes. What did it do?
I asked with a quiet chuckle, making Dale look around in quiet fury at the surrounding, seemingly empty, dungeon. I had a few mobs turn their heads, so light bounced off their eyes at him, just to freak him out a bit. Adam turned serious eyes on his group leader.
Whatever that thing was injected infernal essence into the wound. The corruption wrapped the meridian, pulling it closed. Then it started forcing its way in, attempting to climb the meridian through a non-infernal affinity channel. I had to wrap the whole thing in a layer of celestial essence, and I slowed it down and eased the pressure. But it will gain strength again soon. It is already dismantling my barrier. He needs a powerful cleric if he wants to live, let alone regain use of his arm.
They lifted the man and exited the labyrinth with Hans and Nick providing rear security. Quickly climbing the stairs, they exited my awareness only a few minutes later.
Dang! I did not realize it would be so effective.
I turned my joyful thoughts and attention fully to Danny, who hovered in the air with a line of worry coming across our link.
Cal, I think that maybe this floor is too powerful for the majority of the people that typically come into the dungeon. Do you think that we should tone it down a bit?
She seemed a bit nervous. I certainly considered her words, but ultimately decided that I disagreed with her.
I think that this is the best course of action. Having a new floor should warn the adventurers that it will be far more dangerous, and I know for a fact that the loot on this floor is far better than what is on the other two.
You think they will agree that the rewards justify the risk, then?
Danny queried me seriously.
I do. Also, I never liked the fact that so many people were able to get right next to us. I seem to remember you telling me a long time ago that it should be insanely hard to get into the heart chamber. I wondered where this was coming from. She had always been the biggest proponent of eating as many people as possible.
Okay, that is fair. I just worry about drawing in people that you can't handle. For instance, that powerful mage that walks in every morning, avoids everything except Rael, and then tears his armor off and butchers him? Do they eat him up there?
Danny curiously wondered. I assume so. He is just a glorified rabbit, after all. Plus, I have absorbed some jerky people dropped that contained a bit of his essence. Danny shuddered when I mentioned this, so I tried to change the topic. So, you were getting upset earlier when people cut down all of the plants in the garden room? Danny took the bait.
Yes. Not only that, but I've come up with a way to solve the problem.
Do tell. She sounded vicious and furious, making me get all excited.
A mini-boss.
My enthusiasm waned a bit. A what? Are you making up words again? She laughed.
You are going to like this. There is no real reason to cut down all the plants, right? So, we punish them for doing it. If they cut down a certain amount, let's say more than half, we allow a boss to spawn in the room.
I'm in. Did you have something in mind, or should I try and make something? She was silent a moment before answering shyly.
This is the part you, might not like.
Go on. I said you had total control of that room, right? I won't go back on my word, I assured her.
I want you to put Baines in there,
she informed me to my great disgruntlement. Danny, I thought we were finally done with those, I whined.
Hear me out. That wasn't the part you won't like. I want you to upgrade them and use the tentacles from the distortion cat,
Danny directed me. I looked at her in great surprise. Danny, those made the cat go insane. They are horrible parasites.
Right. But they made the cats insane because the cats were moderately intelligent. On the Banes, they should just be an appendage. Then the Bane will have a long, medium, and short-range attack. They might actually be useful. Think about it. Revamping an old boss that never got a kill.
She trailed off tantalizingly, watching for my reaction. I was almost salivating at the thought of amending what I saw as a failed experiment. Not fair. You know all of my weaknesses. I will try, but it is a moot point unless the patterns will mesh.
Just promise to give it your best shot, okay?
She muttered with concern. She knew how much I hated the mind-altering effects those tentacles used. Offensive. I always do my best for you. I focused on the patterns in my mind, pulling them together and hoping that they wouldn't. I sighed. I tried the tentacle pattern with a different creature, then another.
Well?
Danny demanded. Oh, yes. They work with the Bane. Actually, the tentacles work with almost everything. Every different type of living creature I've ever made. I tried rocks and swords, but no luck there. This garnered me a strange look. What?
You tried on rocks? You know what? Never mind. Can you tie them to the room so that they spawn when plants are killed off?
She exasperatedly pushed the conversation forward. Yes. There we go. So I redirected the essence in that room into spawn seeds. When about 25% of the plants are cut or destroyed, their essence will spawn a new style Bane. Basically, up to 4 can spawn in the room at a time. Now we just need to increase their rank and give them a new name. I informed her, much to her delight. I had kept my hidden failure room on the second floor and was excited that I would get to play, experiment again so soon after a large upgrade to my dungeon. I had made some upgrades to the room, basically what amounted to an acid waterfall that I could pour onto whatever was in the room. Then I could light it on fire. A very beneficial upgrade which allowed me to absorb my new creations right away.
I grew the small Bane Plus tentacle in the room and studied the G-Rank 9 creature. I was looking for signs of insanity or incompatibility and heaved a small sigh when there were no apparent negative effects. If this is what you were thinking, do you want me to use pure essence or add in some combination of corruption? I prodded Danny, who was enraptured by the small Bane with a waving, probing tentacle.
Oh, if I have been correctly understanding what you've been doing recently, a combination would be best. Now, this has earth and water essence, a bit more earth than water, creating a plant essence combination. With the tentacle, it has a large portion of infernal as well. So how about you try adding a mix of those three, keeping the ratios roughly the same?
I looked at her in amazement. I had not realized she was paying that much attention when I babbled on about what I was doing. I needed to return the favor more frequently. On it. What rank do you want it to be? She dithered a bit.
Well, the typical mob on the first floor is an F rank 2 or 3, but this is a boss, though there might be 4 of them.
Let's set them to be about the same rank as the first floor boss squad. Most likely, they won't have all 4 show up at the same time, right? I say F rank 5 or 6, really punish them for damaging your herbs and flowers. I got thoroughly enthusiastic about this idea.
You just want more essence,
she grumbled with a chuckle in her voice. Well, yeah. If someone dies, I get all their refined essence in one go. Otherwise, I need to cultivate just like the unwashed masses. I started directing essence and corruption into the Bane, and it rapidly began to grow. At F rank 0, a second tentacle sprouted. At F rank 4, a third appeared. I stopped it at F rank 6 as promised, and watched as it probed the air with the newly grown tentacles. Remembering how the distortion cat attacked, I released a rabbit into the room. The tentacles went still. Then the maws on the ends opened and tried to release a howl that would stun the small creature. They did roar, but there was no essence in this howl. The wiggling weapons hissed in frustration. The rabbit tried to run away, but didn't get far as the main body of the Bane released a thorn that killed the terrified creature from a dozen paces away. I've seen enough. I think it will work out just fine on the first floor. I poured my favorite acid, etching solution, onto the Bane. It roared, coated in burning fluid, and slapped the tentacles onto the ground, uprooting the plant and throwing it out of the acid. Wow! Luckily, the damage was done. After allowing a few moments for the acid to do its job, a new pattern flowed into my mind. Over the next few minutes, Danny and I worked out a plan to set up the mini-boss in the garden. Night was fast receding by this point, so there were no auras in the area to interfere with my work. Even the majority of the miners had left by this point, but there was one in full armor still banging away at the walls. All set, Danny. That'll be a nasty surprise for people tomorrow.
10. Dale woke up and stretched, still amazed by his new body. He had only been asleep for 3 hours or so, but was so well rested that he had no choice but to get up and do something. He walked around until he grew bored. Then he peered around the darkness and called out softly, "Any elves nearby?"
"Right here, Your Grace,"
a form stepped out of the shadows. Dale hadn't met this one.
"Oh, wonderful. I was wondering if you had... Well, first, what is the guard group here called?"
Dale altered his tone and position to match the stance of a noble talking to a respected elder. He assumed that almost any elf was going to be older and wiser than him, so it should be a politically savvy move. The elf seemed to smile at him somehow, without his mouth moving.
"We liked the title of your appointed judge, so we are currently going by the Protectorate, so human mouths can form the syllables of our position correctly."
Dale nodded. Though it seemed a bit derogatory, that was just how elves acted.
"Thank you for thinking about the people you are protecting. I need to speak with Princess Brianna. Do you by chance know if she is available?" "She is. We require even less sleep than your people, so we have extended working hours. If you make your way to the grove, I will go ahead of you to inform her of your impending meeting.
That would be fine. Dismissed. Dale gave a ritualistic order, and the elf vanished.
That wasn't too bad.
He started walking toward the elvish embassy, or grove as they called it, when a distinctly non-elvish form stepped from the lee of a large tent in front of him.
"Really, you shouldn't be out and about at this time of night, Your Grace,"
a rusty voice sneered condescendingly as Dale drew his oversized morning star.
"Haven't you heard that night air is bad for your health?"
Dale opened his mouth to demand answers, specifically why he was being stopped by this man, when a club hit him in the side of the face, knocking out teeth and breaking his jaw. A dark chuckle came from the man in front of him.
"Can't have you ordering us to leave now, can we?"
Delirious with pain, Dale still held to his training and began fighting the men that had appeared from behind buildings. He whipped his morning star around him in tight arcs, blocking weapons and breaking bones. In moments, two attackers were dead, but the remaining men attacked without hesitation, beating Dale until his limbs were broken and he lay on the ground unable to fight back.
"Whew! Had a bit of fight in you, huh?"
The first man laughed, grabbing Dale by his ankle and dragging him toward the entrance to the dungeon while the few other surviving men gathered the dead.
"Whoa!"
Dale moaned, face bouncing against a few rocks.
"What's that, dead man? Why? Well, it just so happens that you pissed off the wrong person. She's gonna waive the tax you put in place, and we get a bit of revenge. You see,"
he stopped and kicked Dale in the side, grinding broken ribs against each other.
15% tax means we have to go in the dungeon almost 10 times more than we should if we want to retire."
He finished the sentence calmly, kicking Dale at each pause.
"You die, we get a bit on the side and no taxes. Win-win-win for us. Not so much for you."
The dragging continued, and Dale had a spark of hope as they approached the clerk checkpoint. The spark turned cold as the clerk that had gotten yelled at earlier stepped forward, grinning. She looked up at the men.
"Any trouble? Anyone see you?"
"Nope, all set here. Lost a few, but that was expected. More money for us if we don't have to split it, right?"
The man grinned lecherously back at her.
"I'll be back to take the other reward you offered later. Don't worry about the guild. We will be able to honestly say that we didn't kill him."
They started down the ramp. Luckily for Dale's face, it was no longer a staircase, and quickly entered the dungeon. They were just getting to the far side of the room when a miner stepped out from behind a corner, freezing as he saw what was happening.
"What the abyss is going on here?"
"Don't you worry about it, half-breed. This doesn't concern your type."
The miner lifted the visor on his helm, revealing Evan the dwarf.
"This be murder most foul, and I'll go to the abyss before I stand aside."
He raised his pick and prepared to fight. It didn't go well for him. The other men were better armed and outnumbered the dwarf. They quickly rendered him unconscious and took his inscribed pick. Laughing, the men went all the way to the first boss room, stripping Dale's armor before tossing him in alone. They debated a moment on whether or not to keep his weapon, but ultimately decided that it was too easily recognizable. They threw his morning star across the room, where it swiftly vanished into the floor. When the boss squad appeared, they chuckled and left, retracing their steps out of the dungeon. Dale considered the unpitying eyes of the bashers, desperately screaming through his swollen mouth.
"It isn't personal, but I'm also not going to turn down a free snack. It's been a pleasure matching wits with you, Dale."
"Wait, wait! Please hear me out!"
Dale thought desperately. The bashers paused a moment, then settled on their haunches.
"What, Dale? I already told you that rescuing you was a one-time deal. I refuse to get a reputation as a soft dungeon. Or as one who plays favorites."
"Please, I'll owe you a favor. Almost anything I can do, I promise to do, as long as I don't have to betray my friends,"
Dale said, hoping he was being heard.
"Not worth it."
The bashers moved in closer, preparing to pounce.
Isn't there anything you want or need that you can't do yourself? Dale thought piteously, closing his blackened eyes as the bashers rushed in. There wasn't any additional pain, so after a moment he opened his eyes as best he was able. The bashers were sitting again.
So,